Maine Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Welcome back. It's an Alabama Sunday morning. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning. There's a lot of fun things I want to talk about. Sometimes I think I talk too much. Oh, I don't even like listening to myself talk sometimes. I think I talk too much. But then again, I think, you know, I haven't said it enough. So I'm going to say it again. If, for example, you were listening to the previous show and you heard that somebody said, you know, we can't grow kale here in Alabama. We can't grow lettuce here in Alabama. I better start over. You know, we do winter crops very well, and I need to remind you right here on the edge of winter crop season that you can grow kale for longer in Alabama than probably just about anywhere else you could grow kale. You can harvest it for an incredibly long period. It's amazing. I mean, you can grow kale better here than you can grow it in New England. You can grow it better here than you could grow it in England, I suspect. And in California, maybe California is about as easy. But if you plant it now, you can harvest kale all winter long. That's just fine. That's the way seasons work here in Alabama. You could grow lettuce, too. There's a question as to why you might want to, when you can grow better things. But, you know, I'm going to grow some lettuce. I'm going to try some lettuce. It's all fine. It's a good season for doing that. It's a good season for planting snapdragons. If you haven't planted your snapdragons yet, this now is a great time to sow them from seeds. Get them in as soon as you can so you'll have them blooming all winter long. It's a great time to be thinking about sowing right now. Things like Sweet William and a lot of other things that do well over the winter. It's that time. You can start another crop of marigolds. Great time to start a crop of marigolds. Great time to start a crop of petunias. Particularly if you're on the Gulf Coast and maybe up as far as Birmingham, you can start petunias now. It's a great season for doing it. Alabama is a place of many seasons, and we have to take advantage of each season. Just needed to get that in. You know, there's another thing I'm thinking about, and if you are going to explore the assets of a place like the Gulf Coast or a place like Alabama and the adjacent areas in Northwest Florida and over there in Mississippi, which is, you know, it's just a little border with that used to have George Wallace's face separating the two of them. Not much difference between those two places once you cross the border. Alabama, Mississippi, a little bit of Louisiana, Northwest Florida. We are sort of all the same along the Gulf Coast and all up those states. But if you were to have an asset, so you were to explore the assets of those places, just like you explore your, oh, let's say you've got an investment portfolio, and you were to say, now, what am I missing? What did I do wrong? Where did I make my wrong investment? In Alabama, we've invested in a lot of things that have tanked. You know what I'm saying? A lot of companies that have gone bankrupt over the years. I won't say we invested in a lot of them, and rarely did we ever invest in the things that were intrinsic to Alabama. We invested a lot of money and a lot of time in bringing things into Alabama because we didn't think it was that good a place to live. Got a football team. Surely it's not. But you know, what if we really looked at our assets here in Alabama and we'd realize, well, dadgum, we got a lot of stuff here. Alabama, just by the way, represents about 1%. About 1% of the land mass of North America. And yet it's got 50% of the fish species. How do you manage that? 1% of fish. We've got 1% of the land mass. We got 60% of the mussel species. We've got 1% of the land mass. We've got more than half the species of oaks. We've got more oaks than any other state. We got 1% of the land mass, and we have 90% of the hickory species in North America. 90% of the hickory species in the world, for that matter, with 1%. These are our assets. And there's lots of them. I mean, I could go through the list. They're really incredible. But I got to focus on this asset, which is the asset in our portfolio we never really think about like we should in Alabama. Sunflowers. Now, I know that you think sunflowers are the kind of thing that you buy in a little package and sow in your garden. But, you know, there are 50 species of sunflowers in the world, more or less, minus one, plus one, about 50 species of sunflowers in North America. Half of those species of sunflowers are native to Alabama. A large number of those species are not native to any other that are native to Alabama are not native to any place but Alabama. It's a little bit over into Georgia. Kind of an amazing thing. Amazing thing. We are the center of sunflower diversity, and they're beginning to break out all over the state. And I hope you appreciate them. You know, we have that big annual sunflower, which somebody three or four or five thousand years ago started. Somebody probably off in, I'm going to think New Mexico or Arizona or somewhere like that, decided, well, let's start selecting. That's one of our assets, this annual sunflower. Let's figure out what we're going to do with it. And they started harvesting the seeds, and they got the flower to get bigger and bigger over time, and the seeds to get bigger and bigger over time as they cultivated it, and until it turned into the thing it did now. But they were understanding the assets, understanding how to deal with the assets. We haven't done that. And we've got all these incredible sunflowers. You know, I really think it's interesting to me. I was at a deer camp, not a deer camp, but a preserve where I'm doing a lot of work. And the hunters there planted a bunch of annual sunflowers from, you know, that came from a little package. Nothing wrong with having little sunflowers from a package, but they planted them for the deer. They planted them for the deer. And I thought, dadgummit, did they look in the woods around them? All around them. There were species of sunflowers, all kinds of sunflowers, amazing diversity of native sunflowers, and the deer were just eating the stew out of them, chopping the heads off. I'm trying to figure out what sunflower is that, and the deer eats the head off before I can see it. They're loving those sunflowers. They're loving those native sunflowers, the deer. And they're all around, and no one ever paid attention because everything we bring to Alabama has to come from other places. Well, I've been out looking at the sunflowers, and it is absolutely amazing. I went to a site the other day in the Pine Hills of Alabama. We always undervalue how much diversity, how much beauty is in those Pine Hills. And it was unbelievable, the number of sunflowers just in one area. I mean, I'm going from one sunflower here to the Appalachian sunflower, which is badly named because it grows all over Alabama. The long-leafed sunflower, which is a stunningly beautiful thing, just incredibly beautiful plant, long-leaf sunflower, really only known from Alabama. Maybe one county in Georgia has a population of it. An amazing thing. And then I'm walking right over here, and there's another type species of sunflower and another species of sunflower. It's just amazing. Amazing. How we forget how many assets we have here in Alabama. What are we going to do with all those sunflowers? Well, we could ignore them, which is what we've been doing for a long time. Which is, there's a parable in the Bible, I'm sure, about being left with some incredible assets. And the master of the property comes back and says, what'd you do with it? What'd you do with all this stuff I left you with? You better be ready to report on what you did with all those wonderful sunflowers. Hey, let's talk about sunflowers. Let's talk about growing things. Yes, of course you can grow lettuce all during the winter. It's just a question of whether you want to. We'll be back.
Sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played. Waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town, me and Lillian.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. I'm going to say this. Let me say it just one more time so everybody understands. Because it's important to understand, and it's important to understand right now. Right now. We have many seasons in Alabama. You'd have a heck of a time growing kale through summer. Just like you'd have a heck of a time growing tomatoes through winter in Boston. But that doesn't mean that kale doesn't grow here. It grows very well here. And it grows here for a long, 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 long period of time each year. You can harvest more kale here, I don't have the data to prove it, but I swear, I believe you could harvest more kale here. You could harvest kale till you're tired of it. I promise. Now, some of you may be tired the first harvest, but it can do really good things if you get the right kale. You can harvest kale here all winter long, and not just all winter long, but you can start, if you start your seeds now, you start your seeds now. You can start harvesting that kale in October, November, December, January, February, March. Count that on your fingers. October, November, December, January, February, March. That's 6 months of kale. I don't think you're going to have a hard time finding any place in the world where you're going to get more than 6 months of kale. That's good. That's it. It's really amazing. And it's going to be really easy to harvest that kale during that time because it's not going to be any significant bugs. It's an amazing thing. Lettuce, same way, same thing. If somebody misunderstood, I think, I just want to say you can grow lettuce here like crazy over winter. It's easy. It's just a question of whether there are more fun things to grow. And I'm growing lettuce this year. I'm going to grow it. You know, collards, just this other thing that we grow all during winter. We don't plant it in spring. That's how out of touch we are with where we are. Don't plant collards in spring. Broccoli, radishes, beets, carrots, mustard greens, turnips. Turnips a little harder to grow here because of some beetles we've got, but you know, it does pretty well through the winter. Does great. All kind of Asian vegetables, they all do well during the winter. And just because they do well during the cool season doesn't mean we can't grow them. They do really great. And maybe I should talk about the varieties of kale. I'm happy to do that. I think we talked about collards last week, which I'm kind of excited about. I've got some new collards. At one point I thought kale had some things going for it that collards didn't. But then I'm beginning to discover all of our native collards, not native exactly, but collards that were selected in the South over the past 200, 300 years. And there's a lot of them, and they're very good. They're very good, selected by farmers. They're old varieties that we forgot about. You don't find them in catalogs because the catalogs don't, but now they're finally beginning to get in. Things like Alabama Blue and some of the others. It's really great. Tender like kale. You can cook them in a lot of different ways. But kale, let's talk about kale. You know, I will tell you that that the Red Russian varieties of kale are the best. I really think they're usually the best. But there's some new developments in kale Well, not that new, but people have been fiddling with kale for a while. There's a lot of new ones on the market, and they're all pretty good, and I've grown all of them. You know, there's a kale that some of the traditional Scottish kales do really well here. Now, I will tell you the kale that I don't really have any interest in, and that's the frilly kale that is very common and that is grown on in lots of places. This frilly kale collects a lot of dirt. It's hard to get it out of the leaves. It's not very productive. It's kind of tough. And it just doesn't taste that good. So what are the advantages of frilly kale? Well, it's frilly. That's the advantage of frilly kale. And if you want to look at it, that's fine. But if you want to eat it, I would suggest things like Russian red kale, which is frilly on the edges, but it's not. It doesn't look like one of those little Elizabethan collars that puff up around people's necks. It's just has really nicely dissected kind of oak-like leaves on the edges. It's a great kale. Does very well for us during the winter, but there are lots of others. One that I'll tell you, I'm planted this year. One that I liked a lot was called Simone, S-I-M-O-N-E, I guess is how they pronounce it. I've planted varieties like Bolshoi, which is a hybrid, but it's done very well. Great, tender, big leaves of kale. Sunderland is another one that I really liked. An old-fashioned Scottish kale or from the border country. Made the biggest kale leaves I've ever seen. Gigantic, beautiful kale leaves in Mobile. Incredible thing. So there's a lot of great kales out there. It's fun to experiment with them. And again, the best I can say is stay away from the frilly ones, the ones that have too much ruffle on the edge, because they do tend to hold dirt and they're not as productive. Palm kales, interesting thing. Some years I have great success with palm kales and some years I don't. They're very pretty. They're very interesting. They're very good toasted. If you can toast them just about right, they're delicious that way. But the palm kales, the dinosaur kales, there's a lot of new ones. Some years they're just not as productive as others. So there it is. Lots of varieties of kale. We could talk about more of them. Sunflowers is one of the things we were also going to talk about this morning, and what a great subject, because there's so many and so much fun to use. You know, somebody said that they've dedicated a small strip of their yard to nature, and that's about the best we can do, I guess. But it's fun to think about how would we get sunflowers back into that mix. One thing to do is to look for the sunflowers along the road. And what does a sunflower look like? Well, not all of our native sunflowers have flowers as big as the annual sunflower. That thing was selected over many years to entertain people. But our native sunflowers have smaller flowers, but they're very showy. And a lot of times you'll see one that's very common, Angustifolia, Helianthus angustifolia. You'll see it in old yards all around Mobile, all over the place. It'll be a sunflower that's a perennial sunflower. It doesn't have to be sown from seeds every year. It comes back every year. It's a little rhizomatous. It spreads from as a clump. And it will be 8 feet tall with these big yellow flowers at the top with the typical yellow and black centers, or sometimes red centers of sunflowers. Beautiful thing, and you'll see that along the road, and it's very easy to do from seed. You'll see it in people's yards, and it's a great one to sow. It's a lot of fun, particularly in a small strip like that. I think Helianthus angustifolia will be really good. As you leave strips in your yard like that for wildlife, one thing you have to do is you have to think about, well, why aren't there any trees growing here? Why don't trees take this over? Well, you won't have to think that for long, because the trees will take it over, and it'll be a thicket. It'll be a thicket of blackberries, and then it'll be a thicket of whatever, yopon, and then it'll be a thicket of junk trees, water oaks, and whatever else. Because that's what happens when you just walk away from a place, and you don't think about, well, how did we change things? One of the things is you got roads all over the place. You got driveways. You got houses. You got fields. And that means that all of the things that helped to keep those areas open, one of which was frequent fires, small fires that rippled through, they're not there anymore. So you have to kind of imitate what was going on. So you'll have to mow that area occasionally. You just don't want to mow it more than once or maybe twice a year, because if you do, you're just going to get a golf course with nothing. Not even a pretty golf course. You couldn't golf there. So don't make it a golf course. But, you know, you'll have to mow it occasionally. And we can talk about that. And we can talk about how to do that. Other questions here. When fire ants build a mound around a plant like a fig tree, are they destructive or beneficial? Interesting question. Fire ants are major predators. And they're primarily major predators of insects. They will eat fruits, they'll eat seeds, but they are really good at preying on other insects and caterpillars. So they could play an interesting role. I don't know how much they'll benefit a fig tree, but probably won't hurt it too much. We're going to be back. Give us a call, 251-343-0106.
Well, fine with my mangoes and waving black hair, with the roses so red and the lilies so fair.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back, Gulf Coast, Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I think one of the great sunflowers to start out with, and it's easy for a lot of people to find, is that good old, tall old, big old Helianthus angustifolia. Look it up on the internet. Helianthus, H-E-L-I-A-N-T-H-U-S, Helianthus. Helios means sun. Helianthus is the genus of sunflowers. And we have one that grows along the Gulf Coast and goes throughout much of Alabama called angustifolia, which means basically narrow foliage. A-N-G-U-S-T-I-F-O-L-I-A. A-N-G-U-S-T-I-F-O-L-I-A. Helianthus angustifolia. I wish I were at your computer. If I were, I would just punch all that in for you. And you could go right to a picture and you'd see this and you'd say, Casey, you know, I've seen that thing at people's houses. And occasionally you do. There's several old houses, or at least there used to be in Midtown. I hope they're not all gone, where these were, had been cultivated for years. Just beautiful things. People, they're native sunflowers that people had in their gardens. And they're just stupendous when they're in bloom. Unbelievable. Be looking for them. There's a lot of other sunflowers on the sides of the road, too, in Baldwin County and Mobile County. You can be looking for them. And if you have any questions about whether it's a sunflower or what kind of sunflower it is, I probably can help. You can send me a picture of that sunflower. If it's a yellow flower, and I'll tell you, it's interesting because I think we've got a lot of black-eyed Susans as well in Alabama. We've got, I almost think we may be the center of black-eyed Susan diversity. I found another weird one the other day. Wow, just incredibly beautiful. Coreopsis. There's all kind of Coreopsis on the sides of the road, and they're all beautiful too. We've got all of these yellow flowers, daisy-like things. But sunflowers tend to have a flat disc in the middle. A flat, you know, how they have that big disc in the center. Sunflowers have a flat disc in the middle. It'll vary in size. Some of them will be small in relative to the little petals that stretch out. Some of them will be large in relationship to the petals that stretch out. We got a lot of variation in that. And some of those discs will be reddish brown and some will be yellow. But they're all sunflowers. They may remind you of black-eyed Susans, but a black-eyed Susan will have a cone in the middle. It's a cone flower, black-eyed Susans. That is, that little disc will kind of build up, and it'll sit well above the petals. It's like a cone in the center. a coneflower. That's what we mean by coneflowers. But they're cool, too, and they can also be used, and there's not many of them that I wouldn't use. There's a few that I might avoid, but most of them are really cool, even the ones growing on the side of the road. They're all cool, but you send me pictures. You see those yellow-flowered things with the big disc in the middle? You send me a picture. We'll try to sort it out. There's also silphiums out there. We're also, I think we're probably the center of silphium diversity globally. It's silphiums are these beautiful things that we don't have a good name for. We'll call them rosin weeds. A rosin flower, rosin sunflower is another good name for them. But they're beautiful, beautiful plants, and they're growing on the sides of the road. You'll see lots of them. Send me some pictures. Find those things on the side of the road. Send me some pictures. We'll talk about them. David is doing great with his garden. His gugusa is now coming in. And David is going to... You know, David, you should post on Facebook what you do with that. You should post it on Facebook what you're doing with that gugusa, and we will announce the winners of the Facebook contest before the show is out, and we'll talk a little bit about that and talk a little bit about what we can do with it. So I'm love to see what David's going to do with this gugusa, and he's just a little bit away, as he points out, from melaton season. Some questions about help with garlic. I'm going to get to that. Rodney, tell me a little bit about where you grew it. Send me a picture of where you grew it, and I may be able to help. And tell me where you are. That's an interesting thing. And I want to get back to the fire ant situation. But Gary's been waiting patiently. Gary, are you still there?
Good morning,
Gary. Yeah, there you are. Turn your radio down just a little bit.
Okay. All right. Is that better?
Yeah.
We've got an island at the entrance of our subdivision, and it's got a solid stand of Asiatic jasmine, and it gets a lot of weeds that grow up through it, grass-looking weeds. My question is there a recommendation on a particular type of herbicide? Would a glyphosate-based herbicide work, or would that kill the jasmine, or is there another recommendation?
Well, the Roundup won't kill the jasmine, probably, but it'll make it look really ugly. And so I wouldn't recommend doing that. There may even be a way to use it over jasmine because it's such a tough, difficult plant to control. But, if you do indeed have a grass problem in a situation like that, and the only thing you really want there is Asiatic jasmine, there are some herbicides that are designed only for grasses. I'm going to have to look to see which ones would be registered for use where you are and that might work there. It won't control other weeds. The other thing you can do, yeah, so it's interesting. You know, when we come to areas like that, there's a couple of ways to keep weeds from coming in. Usually Asiatic jasmine does suppress weeds pretty well. In this case, it hasn't. But you can have something that's taller growing there, and that will keep those weeds from growing in, and then you can do it. Or you can have something that you mow frequently. Have you ever mowed that Asiatic jasmine? Have you ever mowed it back? Is it ever mowed back at all?
Yes, we cut it. We trim it back about once or twice a year, and it's in the when I say grass, it's just the what comes up through it is a fairly narrow bladed weed or grass It doesn't look like a, you know, a St. Augustine or a centipede, anything like that. When I said grass, I may have misrepresented it. It's fine.
No. It's grass. Grass is fine. There's lots of grasses that don't grow in lawns. Many more that don't grow in lawns that are tall, and most grasses are tall. You know, it could be Kogon grass, and that Kogon grass may be the reason why it's really hard to deal with. The one thing that's harder to eradicate than Asiatic jasmine is Kogon grass. I think it may be the one thing that's harder to eradicate than Asiatic jasmine. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to think about it. I don't usually recommend selective herbicides. In this case, it may be the simplest thing for you. If it is Kogon grass, send me a picture of it and let me know what kind of grass it is. It may make it a lot easier for me to decide how you're going to deal with it. Can you send me a picture of the grass?
Yeah, I can later today. I'm in transit, but I certainly will later today.
Yeah, so send it to me next week on next week's show. And listen, get a picture of that blade kind of close up. There's a little line that goes through the center of the blade. Get me a good picture. If it's off center, it's probably Kogon grass, and I'll need to figure that out. If the grass has a sort of a flower on it, that'll really help me figure out what it is. So, but send me a picture of that, and then let's go from there, and let's try to figure out which grass that is, and I can help you decide which is the best option for it.
Okay, good deal. I'll do it. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Gary.
All right.
Let's see. Where are we? So David Bracken is asking me, and it's a good question. Do native sunflowers have the same effect in terms of suppressing weeds? Yes, some do. I mean, we've got 25 species of sunflowers in Alabama. 25 species. Does that blow your mind? It's incredible. And a lot of times you'll go on a site and you'll see four or five or six of them on the same place. And you wonder, man, what in the world is going on here? Why do sunflowers like Alabama so much? What about Alabama made sunflowers grow here? But each one's a little different in terms of how it reacts. And so some of those native sunflowers, I think, probably are allelopathic. That is, they do suppress the growth of other things. Many of them are not. The picture you have that you sent me is of a Brazilian exotic weed, a Brazilian verbena. I'll think of it. It may be rigida. I'll think of the species here in just a minute, but it's in a little bit of an invasive weed that comes in and it does tend to wipe out a lot of native plants. It's pretty. Butterflies like it. And David, we're all trying to scramble to get more information on the citrus question, and I'll be back to that once I know a little more. I'm giving everybody a little bit of time. I'm giving myself a little bit of time to sort this out. But we got some big citrus questions to deal with. David, thanks for good to hear from you. Good to hear from you. I'll tell you the name of that verbena before the show's out. So we have an advocate for curly leaf kale. I got to say, you know, don't pay any attention to me. Ignore me when I say that curly leaf kale isn't as good as regular kale. just try it. I'm telling you what I like. But, you know, there are a lot of people who like the curly leaf kale. That's good. And you're right. Putting it over mulch can help keep the stuff out of it, as long as the mulch doesn't get too messy. We'll be back.
Growing corn and cotton too, and when the day is over, ride the mule and cut the fool and love again all over. Goodbye, don't you cry, I'm going to Louisiana.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Look, we're here. We're here. We got struck by a bolt of lightning or some kind of power surge. But we're a little delayed, but we're back. We're here. We're here for you. Give us a call, 251-343-0106. We got a little bit of time here. I'm going to try to clean up some things from the previous hour about fire ants. You know, interesting question about fire ants. Are they destructive or beneficial? And I could argue that the South would probably be a little better off without fire ants and Argentine ants and some of the other ants that have invaded us. Because they can be a little bit obnoxious. And I'll tell you, I get stung by fire ants. I can't tell you. You know, almost every day I'm stung by a fire ant. It's what I do. It's where I am. It's how I work. And it irritates me, and I just go on. If it irritated me too much, I wouldn't get anything done. So I try not to get too irritated by it. But fire ants are red bugs. Fire ants are chiggers. Which would I... man, give me the fire ants anytime over the red bugs that are just driving me crazy right now. Yeah. I don't even want to get into it. So, you know, fire ants compare. But let me also say that fire ants are efficient predators of a lot of insects. So I get so I've got some places where I've got trees that like peaches and apples and plums and a lot of other trees that can get borers. B-O-R-E-R-S, borers. And they bore into the trunk. Probably the same is true for, it's also true for dogwoods and some other trees. I do think when fire ants build a mound around the base of those trees, you're less likely to have borers on those trees. And I can tell you that in cotton fields, spare us from having to walk through those cotton fields again looking for bugs, which is what I used to do when I was very young. I can tell you that when you had a good crop of fire ants, you often reduced the even boll weevils, and certainly worms were much less common. Certainly the worms were much less common in fields that had a lot of fire ants, because the fire ants would just eat the boll worms up. They really were good at it. So fire ants, like them or not, and a lot of times I don't like them when they sting me, they're really not that bad for most plants. Occasionally, we get a situation where fire ants will attack fruits. It's pretty rare, but when it happens in a big way. It drives you crazy. And, you know, it'll happen one year and it won't happen the next. I can't tell you why it happens. It's just weird. It's bizarre. Every now and then they attack my eggplants one year. It's bizarre. Just crazy weird. They'll get on okra lots of years, and that's because they're not really after the okra so much as they're after they're actually herding, just like sheepdogs, herding and protecting their flock of aphids that are on the okra. And the okra will often just keep producing. I've got ants on some of my okra now, along with aphids, and, you know, it just keeps producing. You can take a hose and spray them off, spray the aphids off and the ants, and that kind of knocks them back. You won't get rid of them entirely, but you can keep picking your okra. So on balance, I'd have to say that in a garden, in a vegetable garden, fire ants are about as good as they are bad. As long as you don't get stung by them, and as long as you don't let your youngins, the youngest, get stung by them. And can you get rid of fire ants? anybody who has truly rid their yard of fire ants for more than 2 years. I'd love to hear about it. And that's because you can drive them out of your yard, but they're going to be in the neighbor's yard, and they're going to come right back. Boom. You could use a nuclear bomb, I guess. But, you know, if you could just concentrate that nuclear bomb just in your yard so that it didn't affect other yards, they're all going to come back. So we do tend to do more damage ourselves. If fire ants are in the wrong place, I just tell you this, and they're in a place that is really problematic or troublesome, annoy the fire out of them. That they'll go away. You know, it was funny. People used to say, pour grits on them, and they eat the grits, and they explode. Well, of course, that's the silliest thing you ever heard. Of course, that's not true. People believed it for a long time. But you could put grits on there, and you know what would happen? The fire ants would say, I don't want anybody pouring grits on top of my house, and they'd leave. You could pester them with water and lots of other things, Dom Perignon champagne. You could put Dom Perignon on your fire ant mound, and they'll probably go away too. Look at this. It's the top of the hour. We have to take a break. We don't have to, but we feel like we ought to. We're going to be right back. Treatments for chiggers. Wow.
It's Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast with Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Oh, I'm back. And we got lots to talk about. You know, we get to talk about all kind of fun things on the show. We get to talk about all the great winter vegetables that you can be growing, which we need to be talking about now. We need to talk about sunflowers. You know, I don't want to leave the sunflower thing because this is the beginning of sunflower season here along the Gulf Coast. And it's kind of representative of what we do, even throughout Alabama. All throughout Alabama, sunflowers are going to be coming up everywhere. Now, I shouldn't say everywhere because we've certainly made the world inhospitable to the native Alabama things. Along interstates, we mow too much a lot of times. We mostly made it safe only for Kogon grass and really terrible invasives. But there's a lot of places where the woods have grown in and nothing can grow because the trees are gorillas and they've taken all the sunlight and nothing else can grow there. So, but if you will drive through Baldwin County and Mobile County, you're going to see, beginning this time of year, you're going to see the goldenrods. They're going to be up. They're going to be just beautiful. You're going to see all kind of neat pink flowers and some red flowers and just beautiful things. But you'll also see these big yellow daisy-like flowers, bigger than daisies. I hate to use the term daisy. It's a thing we had to import from Europe. But they're our native. Many of them are our native sunflowers. Some of them are black-eyed Susans. We can talk about how they're different. Some of them may be even Coreopsis or tick seeds or Bidens. There's some beautiful Bidens that are going to be blooming in the middle of the Delta. And we can talk about what makes a Bidens a Biden and a Coreopsis. But a lot of those are going to be Silphiums and sunflowers. And they're beautiful things, and they're blooming right now. Just take a look at them. Take a picture of them. Send me a picture. Let's try to sort out which ones they are. They're really cool. Tara, this is just, you know, this is just a delight to talk about this since they're driving me crazy right now. Are you still there? You still want to talk about this? Oh, she's gone. Tara wanted to talk about chiggers. And red bugs. Let me tell you a little bit about it because it is a liability this time of year. Worse than fire ants, in my estimation. But I will tell you what I will tell you what I would do for chiggers and red bugs. And it works, and you just got to do it. As soon as you get in from a place where you think you might get red bugs, you might not feel them, you just get a sense that they're there. If there's high grasses and there hasn't been fire in that area, fire gets rid of red bugs. Fire eliminates red bugs. If you go to Splinter Hill Bog, you're not going to get red bugs because they burn it. And there's just going to be so few there, it's not going to be a problem. Not going to get many ticks either because of the fires. But because we've suppressed fires and because we've changed things in unnatural habitats, we get tons of red bugs now. Particularly in areas with tall grasses and other wildflowers. It didn't used to be that way, but it is now. And you wade through it and you go through a thicket of brush, you're going to get them on there too. When you get home, do this. You may not feel the chiggers yet, but just as a precaution, use soap. Now, I don't mean, when I say that, I don't mean take a shower. What I mean is get the soap so that it's wet enough and that your body's wet enough that you can lather it up. But don't stand under the shower. And just rub that soap over your legs, over your waist, and all those other places that chiggers like to get, under your arms. And just rub that soap and let it sit there. If you wash it off immediately, it won't have a good effect. But soap is very... Chiggers don't burrow in. They actually sit on the surface. The red bugs don't... They don't sit. They sit right on the surface with a long feeding tube that goes in your body. That's what makes it itch so badly, is the projection of that feeding tube that goes into your body. But you can get them off your skin with the soap, because soap breaks down the soft bodies of those insects pretty well. And it works really well. And anytime I have not come home and done that immediately, and I didn't the other day, and I regret it. And it's one of those things you just learn to do, and it can make a big difference, even a few hours later. But I always recommend that when you come in from an area where you think you've gotten chiggers, that's how to do it. Now, what do you do when the chiggers start itching? You just got to wait it out. Try not to scratch too much. All right. So everybody's got a prescription for fire ants. I don't think when you take a shovel full of fire ants and you put it on another mound, I think they don't kill each other off. I do think that it's sort of that situation where they just move. And one of the things you have to appreciate about fire ants is that they do move pretty regularly. It's usually pretty easy to get them to move, and there's a lot of ways to do it. You can take a shovel from one fire ant mound and you can dump it on another fire ant mound, and that disturbance may cause them to move. They don't kill each other off, but they move. You can take a bottle of Dom Perignon champagne. I think this works very well. Take a bottle of Dom Perignon champagne. Get a real expensive one. Pour it on the mound, and the ants will move. Or you can take the hose, which may be less expensive than Dom Perignon. And you can hose the mound down really good. You'll probably have to do it 2 or 3 times, and they'll move. That's it. They just hate disturbance. They do not like to be disturbed. I want to be left alone. That's what fire ants are saying to you every time they bite you. Just leave me alone. But if you don't leave them alone, if you pester them, they're going to move. There it is. It's that simple. That's really the secret. That is the secret to it all. So Ellen is asking me about planting arugula. You know, I plant arugula any way I want. It all seems to come up. I don't think of it as that light compared to a lot of other seeds, but it doesn't need to be buried deeply. That's for sure. And a lot of times, Ellen, when I get arugula in a place, I'll have a gajillion arugula plants the next year because the seeds just drop on the ground and they come up. So it tells me they really don't need to be buried. And if you're burying arugula seeds very deeply, you're probably messing up. just make, at most, make a shallow trench just enough to keep that seed a little bit moist. If some of the seed isn't even covered, you're probably just fine. Just don't plant them too deep. That's the only thing. Direct sowing is fine. I would not, with arugula, you know, I guess, I don't think it makes sense with arugula to sow them in pots. I would just sow them directly in the ground. And it might be a little bit early, might be just a touch early for arugula. Ellen, if you were to sow arugula just as a matter of efficiency, you could certainly sow arugula now. You'd probably run into some problems with bugs and other things. But if you wait until September, late September, sow your arugula then. It'll have plenty of time along the Gulf Coast to come up. Might sow it mid-September, a little farther north and around Montgomery and Birmingham, but just sow it in September. Late September on the Gulf Coast, a little earlier, farther north, and it's going to come up just fine, and that same patch of arugula may last and often lasts all winter long, so you don't have to re-sow it. If you sow it now, you're going to have to re-sow, more than likely. It probably will go to seed. It doesn't go to seed during short days. That's another issue. But Ellen's got the broccoli and mustard seeds already ready to go, and this is great. This is really good. You know, the mustard, I never know the perfect time to sow mustard exactly. So usually wait till September, but I think you're doing right with the broccoli. I think it's going to be good. You have to keep it in pots just a little bit longer because you're not going to want to put it out till September. So be ready to bump them up. But then you know, Ellen, you know that your broccoli is going to be ready to flower. Hey, we're going to be back because we've got to get it to flower before the short days of winter. And yours are going to be ready. Good and ready. Ellen, keep me posted if there are any problems. Hey, folks, we're going to be back.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Oh, look at those calibres of broccoli coming up, and beautiful stuff. Beautiful looking stuff. David Hubble is going to post his pictures on Facebook on FM 106.5 Facebook. Under the plain gardening context, it's good. And you can check out his gagutsa, and maybe some of his recipes, maybe some of his uses of gagutsa as well. The mint question, Jesse. I haven't gotten the mint question yet. Let's see here. I haven't heard from Jesse. Tell me what the mint question is, Jesse. Still am so impressed with that beautiful square flower, Tetragonethica, however you pronounce it. Tetra. Square flower would be a good translation of that. Beautiful thing. Michael has sent me a beautiful picture of a plant called partridge pea. Partridge pea. Quail. You know, partridge pea is great for a lot of wildlife. It's one of our great plants. There's a lot of partridge peas out there, as it turns out. I can't tell you exactly which one you're looking at. There is a Gulf Coast variety that's very distinctive. I think this may be it. But it's partridge pea. And it's a beautiful thing. It produces tons of seeds. It's a legume. That means it's a member of the bean family. Quail love to eat the seed. They love the seed. It's a great little thing. Lots of birds eat the seed. It's a really important quail food. And an annual. It's nice to see it. And you know what's also nice to see, what I'm looking at right there? is all those native grasses. I'm seeing native grasses coming up. It looks like broom sedge, and maybe even I'm seeing little blue stem. It's a beautiful thing to see. You have potentially great, great quail habitat there. And you know, we ought to talk about how to make that better. I don't even see any Kogon grass. That's really nice. So you've just got a really beautiful place where lots of great things can happen. I'd love to see a bigger picture of that area, and let's talk about how to make that thing work. And I've got a picture from, let's see, not anybody who's going to... Bruce. Bruce. That's a dicanthellium. It's a type of... It used to be a type of panicum. We split it out because we realized it's so different. Dicanthellium. Which grass is the name for some of those? Which grass? But... You know, that's not a fair name. It's really, there are really some cool, well, okay, I like witches too. So, witchgrass. Well, let's call it witchgrass, but it's not a bad grass. In fact, it can be a very important wildlife food. It can be pretty good forage at times, depending on which dicanthellium you're looking at. The master of dicanthelliums was Dr. LeLong. Used to be at University of South Alabama, and I wish I knew as much about dicanthelliums as he knew. There's a bunch of them, and they're hard to understand. I'm trying to understand all of the species, but I do know that that is a dicanthellium. Can you use it as a cover crop? Well, depends. I think they're easy to control. They're not a big problem. It depends on what you want to use it as a cover crop for. But the seeds are very valuable to wildlife. Really good to have that in a restoration, in a savanna restoration, a place where you want quail. Quail would love that just as much, about as much as they would love partridge pea. So lots of nice quail plants we're looking at. There it is. We're going to look at this wild mint, which is a pycnanthemum. It's one of our, you know, we were debating, what do we call this thing? Everybody calls it mountain mint. Well, it's growing on the Gulf Coast, for heaven's sakes. We've got more species on the Gulf Coast and in Alabama on the flatlands than we got in the mountains. Why in the world would we call it mountain mint? Let's call it frost mint or snowy mint. Cool thing to think about. Bill... I'm listening. What's up with your cucumbers?
Good morning. I took some advice from your call and planted three varieties of cucumber that did marvelously well for me. And my question is, toward the end of their production, I got what I suspect is a pickle worm, or what's been suggested to me is pickle worm. And oftentimes when I'm cutting down my plants, I just drop them in place and maybe mow them over and incorporate them into the soil. Am I dooming myself, when all those eggs and stuff are going into the ground to the same fate?
You know, probably not in any kind of practical sense. Now, you may be doomed to the same fate, but it's not because you let the plants drop.
Yes, I
think there's plenty of things for those pickle worms to feed on, and there's lots of other sources for the pickle worm. Pickle worm's a new thing. I'm hearing about it more and more. I've never had a big, huge problem with it until recently, and so I don't have any real, magic cures for it. I don't know why it's becoming more of an issue, and I'm going to do some research on it and be thinking about it. I'm sure pickle, it's going to be widespread, and there's not anything that really you're doing that's going to make it more of a problem. If you wanted to, one thing I will say is with certain types of plants, particularly if I know they're going to be susceptible to nematodes or pickle worms or other things, there's a group of plants that, like squash and cucumbers, that are going to be susceptible to pickle worms. Mm-hmm. If you can move to another part of the yard next year, it may help a little bit, at least to avoid those pickle worms. It may help just a little bit.
Well, my next quick question, do I have time to get in another crop of cucumbers?
I have never grown cucumbers in fall. I'd certainly try it, and you tell us how it works.
All right.
I would say, you know, it's interesting. It's only recently that I have begun to discover that actually cucumbers actually taste really good, because I grew a lot of really sorry cucumbers for a while.
Yeah. But then I've just discovered I remember that all in your article.
Yeah. And suddenly, boy, I just realized, man, these are great. But I have not tried replanting cucumbers in fall. You can try. The pickle worms, will the pickle worms be worse or better? I don't know. It may be that as the plants mature in September and October, you may see fewer pickle worms. The one thing I will say is the days are getting shorter. Things are going to grow less quickly. So you better get those things in the ground right away. Get them in there as soon as you can.
I just 2 weeks ago planted some national pickling cucumbers, and boy, they're jumping out of the ground. So hopefully they'll come in. But you know, just for your listeners, those varieties were the Ananga Jabai and the Jabai Shimashuras,
Shimashurazu, so
and the
Suyo
Long, and they were just terrific.
They are good. You know, I don't know how we've missed these Asian cucumbers for so long. And they're from a part of Asia that's very similar to the climate on the Gulf Coast. And that's smart, you know, thinking about where how do we get vegetables from climates similar to ours rather than going to Northern Europe to get our vegetables, which we've done, and our fruits. We've been doing that for a long time. It's like we never, you know, it's just like we just got off the boat with Columbus and we just never got over this Europe thing. And but you know, these Southeast Asian and Japanese and Southern Chinese fruits can be really good in our gardens because the climates are more similar to ours, and Japan has a climate very similar to ours, so they're really good. And Okinawan vegetables, oh man, they can do really well in Mobile, and they're really good. So
well,
there it
I
is.
Listened to I'm you last t- week, and it seems a lot of the varieties of vegetables you promoted were Asian, and so I got my seeds coming.
That's right. So it is a big thing. You know, I wish, and South American too. We are learning from a lot of South American vegetables. Not all places in South America have the same climate, but the places that are humid and warm, the Caribbean, those vegetables they're a lot more in store for us in those places for summer crops than there is in Europe, and that's too bad. Now, if you want to go to Europe, they're great for winter stuff. So kale, we do well.
Yeah.
Hey, we're gonna be back. I want to talk more about this. Yeah. Good to talk to you, Bill. As always, I'm gonna work on those pickle worms. And we're going to come back to talk about this Wild Men and some other things.
She lays it for the railroad men. Sometimes one, sometimes ten. That's enough for the railroad men. Look and sing. We laid an egg since away last spring.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning. Lots of things, it's fun things to get to. Michael, I see a lot of things like Johnson grass is in there. And there's some, it looks like you probably have some ragweed, which is a really fine thing to have in that pasture. That pasture, I think, if you could figure out how to burn it, that pasture would respond very well. You'd have some great quail habitat, and you'd have some great native grasses. You'd probably eliminate the ragweed would become a little less dominant, but it'd still be in there. You'd lose some of that Johnson grass, and you'd get some of those great native grasses and a lot of things that are at eye level to a quail, like those beautiful partridge peas. They'd begin to show up in there. I'm liking that pasture. It's a great place to work. We should talk about that sometime. Sean's got his okra coming on beautiful. It's looking strong. And So this beautiful mint that Jesse has sent me a picture of, it's pycnanthemum. Let's call it frost mint. Let's call it snowy mint. You see what I'm saying? It's got those beautiful leaves that look like they're covered in frost, but they're just healthy. They're green. They're beautiful. It's just a beautiful thing. It looks like snow on top of a mountain, snowy mint, snowy mountain mint. I could call it that, I guess, but it's a beautiful. I think that one is the pycnanthemum that I think is going to be called albescens. We're still trying to figure out which species are which. But it's a beautiful thing. I'll tell you, that mint, insects love that mint. Is that not true, Jesse? Have you seen more different kinds of insects? And they're all pollinators, butterflies, bees, wasps that are just stunning. None of them will bother you because they're so intoxicated with that mint. They don't even know you're there. They love that place. They love those mints. They love that odor. It's a great thing to have in your garden. It spreads by roots really easily. That clump, if it's got plenty of sun, will spread, and if it doesn't have to compete too hard with grass, it's going to spread to make a little bigger area there. You can take divisions of that plant, root divisions, and just spread them around. Just little pieces will spread around. You can spread around that way. Or leave it be and take the seeds. The seeds will be forming. Those heads will get brownish. They'll get brownish and maybe even blackish with a lot of varieties. They'll be brown or black when they're dried, and there'll be tons of seeds in there. Don't turn it upside down because all the seeds will fall out. But if you break it off, take those seeds and scatter them around elsewhere in your garden, elsewhere on the edges of woods, where there's some bare dirt, they'll take off. They'll get started. That's what I do. You can scratch the soil just a little bit and then sprinkle the seeds on them. Don't bury the seeds too deep. They don't need to be deep. And you're going to get tons of them coming up. There it is. It's really simple. Great. I love those pycnanthemums. Wonderful things. A question about, it's a great question from Dan, about starting seeds. You know, I the helianthus, the native Alabama sunflowers, are not, they're not annuals. They're not going to bloom this fall if you plant them now. They need a little bit of time to grow. But you can start those seeds now, and they'll be blooming by next fall and next summer. They'll be great. But what can you start now? And it's a good thing to think about. Marigolds are great. Perfect time for starting marigolds. Perfect time for starting calendulas. Perfect times for starting nasturtiums, as you remind me. All those things are great. Petunias. It's a great time to start petunias. For the Gulf Coast, it makes beautiful sense to start your petunias now. Look for some of the old-fashioned varieties, Dan. You know, I don't know. Maybe you don't want to be a petunia guy, Dan. But you should be. There's nothing wrong with being a petunia guy. They're great. They're beautiful. I'm a petunia guy. I'll say. You want to fight me about it? I'll fight you about it. I love petunias. They're beautiful. And, you know, petunias are a great thing to start. Snapdragons. Man, I have been a sucker for snapdragons since I was 3 years old. I am still 3 years old when it comes to snapdragons. You think there's something wrong with me? Well, I'll fight you about it. I love snapdragons. They're great. Start them now. Takes a little while to get up, but you'll be fine. I think you'll have plenty of time to get them up and get them. You know, the only thing about snap, they're really hardy. The only thing is, you got to get them up and ready to bloom before the days get too short. And that's the only reason we start them so early. But snapdragon's a great thing to do right now. If I guess, it's a pretty good list. You know, the other thing is for winter, particularly for those short days in the middle of winter, it can be really fun, Dan, to think about using some of the kales and lettuces as ornamentals, because those leaves are so dramatic. So look around, shop around for some of the showier kales. And I'm not talking about the ones that are specifically developed as ornamentals. They look kind of weird to me, but they're fine too. But a lot of edible kales are really beautiful, and you can use them in your garden. A lot of mustards are really beautiful. Bellingrath used to use the big red Japanese mustard as an ornamental throughout the winter. It's a really beautiful thing. So those things are really good too. That's a pretty good list. I'm sure I could think of more, but I got to get on. And we're going to talk about this. But I got a caller here. Matt, you have been very patient. I'm listening. Are you still there?
Yes.
Matt?
Yes.
Yes. Sorry to be so slow, but I'm listening. Tell me what's going on.
Well, I've got a sago palm, and that's a female that's got this big bloom on it, and it's full of seeds, it looks like. And just really don't know what to do with it. It's the first time it's bloomed.
Yeah, it is probably female, and those are seeds, and, you know, you can just enjoy it. If you want to plant the seeds, you can. It will take its time developing into a large palm. So whether, you know, as purely as a very slow, slow form of entertainment, you can plant those seeds, but it'll be a slow form of entertainment. It will be like, oh, you know, like watching molasses drip out of a pot on a cold day. It's that kind of entertainment. But it'll grow. Those seeds will likely grow into new sago palms, or you can just enjoy them, and they'll be fine too. And they'll all drop on the ground, and everything will be good. But if you want to put them in a pot, you can, and most of them will germinate. I'd put two or three in a pot just to be sure that one of them germinated. When they're ready, they'll pop open, and they'll be brownish, and they'll be easy to remove. And there you go.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't know if there was something I needed to do with it. Because now, like it normally would bloom, the limbs are coming out the top of it, or frogs, or whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, the branches, the leaves will come back out next spring, and they'll come out right below where those fruits were. There's nothing, you know. Managing sago palms is a matter of preference. I mean, there's no real trick to pruning a sago palm, and you don't have to prune at all. A lot of people don't prune. If you like to have the leaves coming out at the top, you can trim off some of the lower trunks and lower leaves, and that's fine too. But it'll all be fine. It's all doing just it's happening according to the plan. It is following the plan, and so you're fine. It's got its own destiny, and it's on the way. So you don't need to mess with it at all, unless you just want to plant some of those seeds.
Okay, well, I appreciate it.
All right, Matt, good to hear from you. Hey, Ed. So I'm interested, Ed. You got some thoughts on chiggers? Yeah, Ed. If you have any thoughts on chiggers, I'm listening. Hey, Rodney, let's talk about garlic as quickly as we can. We got a lot to talk about. Tell me about where you were growing it. Tell me where you are, Rodney.
I think I've told you before, I've got a garden that's only about 4 foot wide, 20 feet long. It's in my front yard over to the side. I do have limited sun, but my garden's all organic material. I probably have 20, 24 inches of topsoil. So I don't think it's the soil. I think it may be the light.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, one of the nice things is if your trees are dropping their leaves in winter, you still may get plenty of sunlight. But if you've got a lot of evergreens like live oaks, it's going to be a big problem. And particularly in winter. I mean, there's less light in winter. And if the trees are evergreen, it definitely isn't going to help your garlic to grow. Are the trees evergreen?
Yeah, of course they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a live oak out in the front yard. I get about 4 hours of good sun a day. When the sun comes up, my next door neighbor had a tree to die because of lightning, and they took it down. So it actually opened up my garden. I get about a good 4 hours, and then some indirect sun during the day.
Yeah, Rodney, I think during winter you're going to need every bit of sunlight you can get for garlic to grow well, and in spring. And I think that that, you know, there may be other issues, but it sounds like your soil's pretty good as long as it's not too wet. This was not the best winter in the world for garlic, I will say, because it was very wet. And garlic doesn't like it wet. Only the Asian garlics will tolerate that kind of wetness. So Lotus and Thai Fire.
Well, my garlic was pretty, but it just didn't
develop.
Go ahead and bud on up. It just made, you know, that one single bud, you know, with the green on top, and it didn't go ahead and fill out.
The bulbs beautiful. Didn't fill out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, and so which varieties did you grow, Rodney?
I was trying something new. I tried elephant garlic this year.
Oh, elephant garlic. Well, elephant garlic's the easiest one. It's not a true garlic. It's actually more like a leek. But it's good, and they're fun. And I think we've kind of ignored elephant garlic more than we should. I wouldn't use it like garlic. I actually almost use it like potatoes. That should do better there than most things. But if elephant garlic didn't do well, Rodney, you got sun issues. You got to have elephant garlic grows well everywhere, but I think you're not getting enough sunlight.
Yeah, I grew elephant garlic one year, and I had just big old bundles of it that I hung out on my patio. It was beautiful, and used it for forever.
Yeah, so I think it's the sunlight. I wish I could help you there. I'll come back with a few thoughts.
I'm going to try it again this year. What I do in the wintertime is I plant a lettuce garden.
Yeah, that's great, and that does well.
My wife and I have just wonderful lettuce. We have any salad
perfect
that we want.
Perfect.
And that's the reason I plant garlic. And of course I plant parsley, cilantro, and some other things. Yeah.
Rodney, we're gonna take a break for just a second. I'm gonna come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about that.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, lots of fun things going on. Great pictures, James. It's so good to be able to answer your questions with such certainty. It's a black walnut. Smell it. Smell that husk. Get that smell. You won't miss it again. Black walnuts. That's what it is. Cool tree, where is it? Where is it, James? You know, you must be up the country a little bit. I don't see black walnut as much in Mobile. That's a particularly nice specimen. My suspicion is you're up in, I'm going to say Monroe County and Choctaw County and Clark County, maybe in that area. I just don't see black walnut as much right along the coast, maybe in central Alabama. But that's what it is. The weed that George sent me is really a fun plant. And is it fair to call it a weed? Well, everything's a weed. Tomato's a weed. Grass, St. Augustine is a weed. And if you understand that, then I think you can call it a weed. But it's frog fruit. Isn't that a great name? Frog fruit. Phyla. Phyla. There's a bunch of species. I suspect that's the weedy one. I'll have to look a little more carefully to figure it out, but they're really cool, and there's nothing wrong with them. See a little bit of buttonweed growing in there. The bees use it. I think it's pretty good wildlife food for a lot of creatures. Frog fruit. How's that? Frog fruit. And maybe the frogs eat it too. I'll have to look that up, but that's one of the names. There's all kind of cool names for this plant. It's the plant of a million cool names. So, at any rate, we'll find out more about that. Probably Phyla nodiflora. Phyla nodiflora. And there's some turkey tangle frog fruit. I don't know. A bunch of them. I think it's probably pretty good for wildlife. And a cool little thing, loved by pollinators, as you noted. Host for several butterfly species. Cool plant. Very cool plant. Kitty, what are you doing? You got some.
Well, I remember you were talking about a way to try to contain your vining weeds, wisteria, kudzu, potato vine.
Yes, ma'am.
By putting tendril down in a bottle. And
yes,
ma'am. And I wondered if you would walk me through that technique, but mainly tell me, how strong do you make it?
Yeah. So here's a funny thing. I read this a couple of weeks ago. The company that makes...
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Oh, well, of course. And I'm sorry, you always have to, you know, I'm sorry you have to wait sometimes.
I'm willing. If not, I hang up.
Yeah, that's right. So here's the thing. Let me tell you about Roundup real quickly. Roundup,
yes,
Monsanto has decided to take it off the homeowner's market. It'll be off the homeowner's market in 2023. And already they're changing. They're using the name Roundup, but they're creating a different set of chemicals that probably will be a devil worse than the first. But, you know, that's how things happen. So you have to be now very careful about which Roundup you use. And what you want to look for is just regular Roundup concentrate. Don't get any of the Roundup Plus or Roundup this or Roundup that. Just regular Roundup concentrate. It'll be about 40%, 43%. And just mix it according to the package directions. The package, the bottle that you buy. And you're probably going to have to buy a big bottle, honestly. They don't really sell it in small bottles. But you'll buy a big bottle. It's going to cost about, I don't know, $40.
I want a big bottle. I don't know.
Yeah, so,
kudzu is coming up the gully, and I'm getting scared.
Yeah, so just mix it according to those package directions and then put the vines in it, and it'll help.
You have to have a leaf on the vine?
Yeah, you probably want some leaves on the vine. Let's say you do.
And how long should it stay on?
And, you know, the nice thing is if you set it up in a milk jug or something like that, you can run it in there, and if it rains, it doesn't matter. You just leave it sitting there for a week or two.
And if it turns over, you just anchor it somehow?
Well, and that's right. Don't fill the milk jug up. And that way it'll have all the ballast in the bottom. It won't have much ballast at the top. You see what I'm saying?
Yes,
fill the milk jug up about a quarter ways. That'll be fine. And
save
with that mixture.
Too.
Yeah. And then the milk jug is very hard to tip over, and it's got a very small mouth. And wind it in there, and it's probably not going to tip over unless somebody kicks it over. And so it'll be fine.
Thank you.
And that's the easy way to do it. I have a second question,
if I may.
Yep.
I have had an air conditioning situation, and my house suddenly started blooming black mold all over the ceilings. And I have, like, tall ceilings, but 10-foot ceilings, but the top part down to the tops of the doors and all the woodwork, I heard someone say that we washed it with bleach water, but that vinegar and oxide made a better wash to kill the mold?
Yeah, so the mold is not going to persist, and it's not really going to be a harmful mold. People scare each other to death with the mold thing. It's like, I don't know, it's like, I shouldn't say this, like vaccines. I mean, people scare each other to death. Mold is occasionally a problem, and in certain circumstances, in that circumstance, I don't think you'll see, it's not going to have any real harmful effects. Some people are allergic to molds just like they're allergic to live oaks.
But I don't want it to keep coming back. Is the vinegar a better solution?
So if as long as the humidity in your house stays low, it's not going to come back. So the humidity is going to drop. Even if you don't have air conditioning, the humidity is going to drop this fall, and it will disappear. But if you have air conditioning, it's going to disappear. But vinegar works pretty well. It just changes the pH and makes it harder for the mold to live. And I just regular old vinegar will work fine. And you got the mold
vinegar.
Because you're... Yeah, that's right. That's right. And it just changes the pH a little bit and makes it a little harder for the mold to live. And just wiping it off works just fine. But it's not going to be some insidious thing. Your air conditioner is now working?
Yes. It was something with a leak under the house and condensation and floor, subfloor, wet, soaked. And it went up the walls. I have old...
I see.
There's no insulation, nothing stopping it. So,
yeah, so was there... What,
and
did
it
you
is
have insulation?
Coming back. I mean, it is coming back. I've washed three
so
rooms.
So you got a different issue. Let's talk about this. You need to... Kitty, I ran out of time. Call me next week and let's talk about it and let's see what's going on.
I'm taking care of the AC part. Okay, thank you.
All right.
I was raised in the country, that's a natural fact. Food on the table from the garden out back. Everyone working to make